We have supported openers in other years, but with the situation this year, every fish is precious.
A call to close commercial salmon fishing on the Kuskokwim. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, July 23rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Anchorage residents push for less dramatic price swings for NSTAR gas.
40% to a newly retired person has a great impact on my budget.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group wants the state to end all commercial openings for the remainder of the summer. They say despite unmet subsistence needs, the state has allowed commercial salmon openings. Some upriver fishermen say they are fed up with the state and want the Federal Subsistence Board to manage the river from here on out. KYUK's Daisha Eaton has more.
Bev Hoffman is co-chair of the Kuskokwim Salmon Management Working Group, a group of stakeholders in the fishery that's advising managers. On Monday, she sent a letter to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Commissioner Cora Campbell, asking her to stop all commercial fishing on the river and in Kuskokwim Bay.
We have supported openers in other years, but with the situation this year, every fish is precious. And here at the lower river, we're able to use the chums quite easily. They're beautiful, they're silvery and fresh. Further up the river where they see the effects of whatever we're doing down here, they just were frustrated. So I supported a no commercial opener this year.
State management biologist Aaron Potter says the department is transitioning to coho salmon management and will not hold any more commercial openings until they determine there's a surplus of cohos. That's after 18,000 chum salmon, 2,500 sockeye, 5,000 silvers, and 29 kings were caught in commercial nets. On July 9th, the working group voted against a commercial opening because they said subsistence needs had not yet been met, particularly upriver. Only one member of the group dissented. Nastasha Jackie Levi, with the village of Lower Kalskag, about 100 miles upriver from Bethel, doesn't think there should be commercial openings until subsistence needs are met for the native people along the entire river.
A lot of our people are still fishing. There's even some families that are just going to start fishing. Most of our residents have not met their needs. We haven't been seeing the number of fish that this Bethel test fishery is saying is coming up here. When there's a commercial fishing, we know in 2 days, more or less, that we'll hardly see any fish.
Subsistence fishers are relying more heavily on chum harvest this year, and many say coho or silver salmon will be needed to meet needs. Some communities want the federal managers back in control. The villages of Lower Kalskag and Napaimute passed resolutions Monday requesting the Federal Subsistence Board take special action and, once again, exert federal jurisdiction for management of the fishery. Federal officials had managed the King Run after a request from Nabuskiak Traditional Council earlier this spring. Fish and Game's Aaron Potter says if there's a harvestable surplus of fish, he's required by law to open for commercial fishing once escapement goals are met.
Part of our mandate is to provide that opportunity. We had a processor that was interested in buying. We had fishermen that were interested in fishing. We had a surplus. We had opportunities in that back end of the chum salmon run before the coho really start getting into the river system.
You have to have these openings?
We would be doing a disservice to commercial fishermen in that entire industry if we didn't provide for a harvest opportunity.
In the letter addressed to Commissioner Campbell, Hoffman notes that Coastal Villages Region Fund loses millions subsidizing the commercial fishery. Commissioner Campbell's office says she's out on travel. Jeff Regner, the director of commercial fisheries with ADF&G, answered for her, saying he'd received Hoffman's letter.
We recognize the working group and their concerns. You know, we participate in all the working group meetings. We understood where their stance was on commercial opportunities, substances needs being met during the meeting. This letter reiterates that. Sometimes we're not always on the same page, but never stops us from continuing to work to be on the same page.
Managers have held three commercial chum salmon openings on the Kuskokwim River from Bethel downstream to the mouth since July 14th. And there have been more than a dozen commercial openings for chum and sockeye salmon for the Kuskokwim Bay districts since the fishery opened earlier. In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Community members packed the hearing room of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska this morning in Anchorage. They pushed for consistent gas pricing from NSTAR in response to a recent big jump in rates. KSKA's Ann Hillman attended the public hearing.
About 90 people filled the seats and stood in the hallway to tell the Regulatory Commission their concerns about NSTAR's recent rate increase. The company is charging about 50% more for each unit of gas they sell from July to September. Resident Terry Saldana says she wants to know why.
I understand that, you know, prices are going to fluctuate and go up and down, but 40% to a newly retired person has a great impact on my budget.
Carolyn Gardner testified before the commission. She says she's mad and she wants the commission to fix the volatility in prices.
I think they should reconsider the okay of it. I mean, it's a ridiculously high increase.
The RCA approved the increase in June. NSTAR representatives spoke before the commission and explained the jump in prices, called the gas cost adjustment. Basically, NSTAR overcollected money from customers in the first quarter and then undercollected in the second quarter. NSTAR is not legally allowed to profit from selling gas. In the past, the natural gas company only adjusted their rates once per year. Now, they do it every 3 months because they have different types of contracts to buy gas from the producers, like Hilcorp and Buccaneer. NSTAR spokesman John Sims says that to make the rates more consistent throughout the year, they have to ask the RCA to change the rules that regulate how much they can charge for gas.
So that's one of the things we're going to look at. We're going to look at how that might impact our gas supply contracts, how it could impact our deliveries, and also how it could impact the customers.
Sim says, in the meantime, customers can use NSTAR's budget billing system. Then, their bill would be exactly the same every month. During the hearing, the RCA discussed the possible need to investigate the way NSTAR determines their gas cost adjustment. In the end, they decided to give NSTAR a few weeks to fix the volatility problem on their own. They will take up the issue again at the end of August. The estimated average cost of natural gas for 2014 will be slightly higher than it was in 2013, but it's still much lower than in 2009. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, learning to be a jazz singer at Fine Arts Camp in Sitka.
It's a huge process that when people come out the other side, they are totally changed.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. And by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine.
A Superior Court judge has ruled in favor of an initiative to ban commercial set netting for salmon in urban areas. Earlier this year, Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell blocked the initiative sponsors from collecting signatures to appear on the ballot based on a recommendation from the Department of Law that the measure would qualify as an unconstitutional appropriation. The state also argued that such an initiative would count as an allocation to sport fishermen and that it would erode the power power of the Board of Fisheries. Superior Court Judge Catherine Easter dismissed those arguments, finding that the initiative does not qualify as a giveaway program and that it could serve a justifiable regulatory purpose. The Department of Law is currently reviewing the decision to see if an appeal is appropriate. The initiative is being sponsored by the Alaska Fisheries Conservation Alliance with the aim of getting it on the 2016 ballot. It is backed by key sport fishing interests. The measure would shut down the commercial set netters who operate in Cook Inlet, the only region in the state that would be affected by the ban. The State Epidemiology Office has released a new mercury contamination risk determination for Alaska fish. The new guidelines basically increase the number of Alaskan fish that can be eaten safely and without restriction. Ali Hamad, Environmental Public Health Manager for the state, says Alaska fish has a lot going for it health-wise.
The benefits are really huge in terms of nutrients, and even if you catch the fish yourself, there's the sport benefit, there's a cultural benefit. So we really hope that people continue to make good fish consumption choices.
In addition to the fish already on the unrestricted consumption list, including all types of Alaska salmon, the new guidelines determine that lingcod, certain rockfish, and eight other fish species can also be eaten by kids and women of childbearing age without restriction. A new study from the journal Waterbirds shows there's an increasing amount of mercury occurring in birds in Alaska's Arctic coast. KDLG's Thea Card reports.
The yellow-billed loons migrate to Asia from the Alaska Arctic plains every year. Mercury levels tested in these birds have doubled since a study in 1912 was released. The recent study says the methyl mercury in the Arctic is rising, but these loons are receiving the majority of the mercury when they travel overseas to Asia. The diet of a yellow-billed loon consists mostly of fish. The higher up the food chain, the more likely the organism is to ingest higher levels of mercury and other toxins. Executive Director at the Biodiversity Research Institute, David Evers, says the researchers caught a sample of loons and tested their blood and their feathers.
And a blood sample shows how much mercury is in their body from a recent period, let's say the last week or two. And a feather sample tells us the mercury in the body over a year or even the lifetime of the bird. And the objectives of the study were to look at mercury exposure spatially, so both on the breeding grounds and in wintering areas, and then also temporally to look at mercury exposure over the past 100 years or so.
Evers says the scientists have electronic tracers on loons so they can monitor them from thousands of miles away. He says the birds near the North Slope don't have high levels of mercury. It's when they travel for the winter to Asia that the loons pick up the mercury. He says birds with excess mercury in their system spend 10 to 15% less time incubating their eggs. Evers says there are currently a few precautions nationally and even an international program undergoing to make these levels decrease.
There is direct activities that can be carried out right now. There's a new global treaty that was signed by the U.S. and over 100 other countries in October of 2013 called the Minamata Convention. And in that global treaty, there are many ways to reduce mercury at local, regional, and global levels, including the mercury emissions from China and India that appear to be landing in Alaska. Once that treaty is ratified by half of the countries that have signed on, then the clock starts ticking within the convention and the various stipulations go into effect.
The study looked at 115 birds and eggs collected from 2002 to 2012, mostly from the Alaskan North Slope. There are roughly 3,000 yellow-billed loons in Alaska, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is considering placing the bird on the endangered or threatened species list. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card.
Canadian environmental officials just gave provisional approval to a controversial mine planned for an area northeast of Ketchikan. Their counterparts in British Columbia have done the same. Fisheries, tribal, and other activists on both sides of the border say this is one of the last chances for critics to let Canadian officials hear their opposition. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld visited the mine site.
Brent Murphy stands on a windy alpine ridge covered with short plants and wildflowers. He's overlooking a deep valley not far from the Alaska border. Murphy's a spokesman and environmental official for Seabridge Gold. That's the company working to develop the Kerr Sulphurates Mitchell prospect into a mine.
We're on the west slope of the proposed tailing management facility for the KSM project. You can see in front of us is the valley that we're proposing to utilize.
Working with government and tribal officials, the company chose this valley to dam and store mine tailings. That's the waste rock left after gold, copper, and other valuable minerals are removed.
And from an environmental, economic, operational, safety point of view, this is the best location to ensure a responsible project.
A helicopter takes us across snowfields and glaciers to another valley, this one barren, with steep iron red brown stained walls. Trickling streams and gushing waterfalls carry the naturally occurring acid rock drainage into a nearby creek. That small waterway eventually connects with the Unic River, which crosses the border north of Ketchikan. This is where miners will dig one of several huge pits to extract the ore. Most of the water will be diverted. Murphy says what they can't keep out of the pits will be collected for treatment.
And there'll be a dam located just downstream of about 3.5 kilometers from here. And that'll basically hold the water back, and then we'll direct the water to a water treatment plant, and then it'll be discharged into Sulphurets Creek.
And that goes into the Unic?
That goes into the Unic, yes.
Those plans and many more are part of an environmental assessment that just won provisional approval from Canadian officials. It follows a similar decision from the province. The federal report says, quote, "The agency concludes that the KSM project is not likely to cause significant adverse environmental effects." It goes on to say mitigation measures included in the report will take care of whatever problems exist. Greg Knox is executive director of the Skeena Wild Conservation Trust, a British Columbia watershed protection group. He says the decisions are no surprise.
Government in British Columbia is very pro-industry, and they try to do what they can to make projects go ahead. So their statements are as expected.
The company's measures include the water treatment plant in the Unic watershed. They also include the tailing storage facility, which drains into the Nass River, which empties into the ocean not far from the southeast Alaska border. Members of the public have through August 20th to comment on the lengthy plan. That may not be easy, says biologist Kevin Koch, who works for the Gitnyau Fisheries Authority, part of the tribal government for a region including the Nass River.
These facts might be buried, like with KSM, within a 33,000-page environmental assessment application. And sometimes it's tricky to make sure you've got the right facts within these massive applications.
But Alaska critics won't hesitate to let their views be known. A press release citing representatives of the Tlingit-Haida Central Council, the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association, Rivers Without Borders, and other groups names numerous problems with the project. They say polluted mine water from the KSM will damage salmon and other fish that spend part of their lives in Alaska waters. They worry a catastrophic dam collapse could destroy extensive areas of habitat, and they say there's no guarantee that the people promising to protect the environment will be around when they're most needed. Knox of the Conservation Trust agrees.
If they do either start to build a mine or they build the mine and operate it for part or all of the timeline, and then something happens to the company, then there's a real risk to the people of BC, the people of Canada, and potentially those folks downstream.
Back at the KSM mine site, Seabridge Gold's Murphy says the company is sincere in its efforts to protect the environment. He says the assessment plan is full of ideas from critics, tribal leaders, fishermen, hunters, and others concerned about the project. Murphy points out that the environmental assessments are just part of the process of approving the project for construction. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Terrace, British Columbia, east of Prince Rupert and about 200 miles southeast of Ketchikan.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. And by Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you.
The Chupik language is about to get its biggest audience yet. A new app has been developed to help Chupik students learn their language and show it off to the world. KYUK's Charles Enoch has more.
When you're searching for the newest iPad app, you may be surprised to find one in an Alaska native language, but that's what you'd get when you download a version of the Millie Molly storybook series. Those are the voices of Chupik narrator Rebecca Nayaman, Ignatius Chayelkun, and Lillian Olsen from the story Millie, Molly, and Bertie, or Milik Malik Apakchoklu in Chupik. The story has been translated into several languages, and now Chupik. The new app was developed with a language innovation grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards. Dr. Robert Wicker is the Consortium for Digital Learning Director. He says they're looking for ways to preserve and maintain Alaska Native languages.
Now we have 20 Alaska Native languages, some on the verge of being very endangered and some on the verge of disappearing. And we're seeing a strong interest at the state level and also the federal level in the preservation of language.
That's why they awarded the grant to the Kashunamit School District. It's a single-site school district for Chivak, Alaska, one of two villages along the Bering Sea where Chupik is still spoken. The village is remote to say the least, about 500 miles from the Alaska road system. Wicker and the other members of the AASB traveled to Chivak to assist with the recording, but they decided they could save time and money by producing at a location better suited for such an undertaking.
We saw real quickly this was going to take a long time if we were going to do it the way we did it then. We decided that we should send the three speakers to the New Zealand recording studios, and they would just hammer these books out within a week. I just think it was a very heroic trip. People were basically traveling halfway across the world to preserve their language for their children.
3 months after the recording was completed at Kiwa Digital, the Chupik versions of the Millie Molly series are now available in the iTunes store. The app is considered as an interactive book with features such as full word-for-word narration, also an added feature of word pronunciation when a word is tapped, and syllable pronunciation when a word is double-tapped. Wicker says they're being downloaded worldwide.
And they're being downloaded in Russia. They're being downloaded in Europe. They're being downloaded on the East Coast of the United States. Why? I'm not really sure. But there's an interest in learning and seeing how other people communicate in their native language.
Along with the Millie Molly series, two more books narrated and illustrated by Alaska Native students are also available on the App Store. To check the app out, type out any variation of the word Chupik into the iTunes search bar. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
The D. Daniels Vocal Jazz Workshop is underway this week in Sitka. For the last 2 years, Daniels has interrupted her touring and teaching schedule to live at the Sitka Fine Arts Camp and coach a half dozen students of widely ranging ages and ability. KCAW's Robert Woolsey recently stopped by her class.
For her, it's bigger than himself, the West Beast.
This is Juliana Logan, a 17-year-old from Vancouver, British Columbia, singing her own composition called The Glove.
She wants himself.
I'm pretty sure this is an extraordinary rehearsal, but then her teacher, Dee Daniels, stops her.
How are you going to phrase that?
Because, but you say, she ain't much. So it's phrasing then.
Stops her again.
Can I stop you again? If you said, his love for her is bigger than himself.
The west, the east, the north, the south.
And again, and again. Dee Daniels has been working for 2 days with a half dozen vocalists ranging in age from teen to midlife. And though she'll offer a full week of lessons, their concert falls on day 3.
Yesterday we were kind of using the analogy of tunnels. The tunnel, you look at it from the one side and it is dark and scary in there, you know. But it's a huge process that when people come out the other side, they are totally changed. I mean, not only in singing, but the other parts of their lives, you know, because they went to the mountain.
Be something more. She wants him stop.
My first teacher in voice music was George Peckham. When I went to see George, I was so receptive because I knew I had a lot more than I knew how to access at the time. I could hear it, you know, I could feel it. But it was mostly his concepts that got me opened up and receptive. His main one was, it's the mind that is musical, not the body. So if you can't get what you want, there ain't no use in crying. Then it takes it a whole nother thing and it says what you really wrote.
Daniels, you know, is tough. Okay. Parsing every line. And phrase by phrase, Juliana is getting it. She's growing as a singer, and her song, even though she wrote it, is coming to life. Juliana, she is a better singer now than she was 30 minutes ago. She came through something. You stopped her a lot.
This is where I know you can go if you want to go there. And she made that decision that, okay, I'm willing to walk into the tunnel, you know. It can happen just like that because it's all mental. It's a choice, you know. She made the choice to do it, and she did. And they all have in just the 2 days we've been here.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Wolsey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton and Charles Enoch in Bethel, Joaquin Palomino and Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Ed Schoenfeld in British Columbia, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Craig Taylor Equipment Company, an authorized dealer for over 15 manufacturers, including John Deere and Bobcat, celebrating 60 years of business in Alaska. More at CraigTaylorEquipment.com. Attention, Alaska gardeners. Invasive weeds are a threat to landscaping, lawns, and gardens. They can spread and harm Alaska wildlife and waterways. Potted plants, hay, gravel, and soil, even clothing and vehicles can transport invasive plants to Alaska. So learn more at AlaskaInvasives.org. Let's protect Alaska together. Visit AlaskaInvasives.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Agriculture and the U.S. Forest Service. Celebrate summer with Alaska Public Media and world-renowned barbecue chef and author Stephen Reichland of PBS and the Create Channel shows Barbecue University and Primal Grill on July 25th through the 27th. The benefit for Alaska Public Media include a barbecue salmon cook-off, barbecue class, and a pig roast over lunch. Tickets available at AlaskaPublic.org. It's sponsored by Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, the Hotel Captain Cook, and Crush Wine Bar and Bistro.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.